Hey, this is Todd Henry. Welcome to the Axon Creative Podcast. When I ask creative pros what prevents them from sharing ideas, from putting their work into the world, often the one thing I hear from them is that they're afraid it's not good enough. Today, we're going to talk about the paralyzing force of fear and how we begin to overcome it. Hey everyone, welcome again to the Axon Creative Podcast. My name is Todd Henry. Of course, I'm your host. I'm also the author of a bunch of books. And one of those books is called Die Empty. It was a book that came out in 2013. And today we're walking through one of the chapters in Die Empty. In fact, we've been doing this over the last several weeks, walking through the book Die Empty, a chapter at a time, and talking about what I call the seven deadly sins. These are the seven forces that prevent us from engaging fully and freely in our work, that keep us in a place of stasis, or that cause us to settle medius ochreus. Halfway up the rugged mountain, that's where the word mediocrity comes from. Medius ochreus, halfway up the rugged mountain, meaning that we settle in. At some point, we just settle in. We say close enough, good enough, and we fail to do the work that we're capable of doing. We know that we could do more. We know that we need to continue growing. We know that we're not really delivering in the way that we're able to deliver. And yet, something keeps us in that place of medius ochreus. So how do we begin to overcome that? How do we begin to counter that? Well, one of the forces that comes against us, I think most strongly and most overtly in our creative process is that of fear. I find that a lot of creative pros express that they are afraid of the perceived consequences of failure. Not the actual consequences, the perceived consequences of failure. What might happen if I introduce that idea, if I put that project into the world, if I, you know, leave my job and go do this other thing that I've been wanting to do for a long time? What's going to happen if I take a step, I take a risk, and I fail? And we tell ourselves stories that often are not reflective of reality. There's a guy named Neil Feary who does research into procrastination, and he'll often bring people into a room and he'll put a wood plank on the floor, you know, 6 feet long and 4 inches wide. And he'll ask people, could you walk the length of this plank if I ask you to? And they'll say, well, of course, it's just a wood plank on the floor. I'd have to be drunk not to be able to walk the plank. Of course I could do that. And he'll say, great. Now imagine I take that wood plank and I suspend it 100 feet in the air between two buildings. Now, could you walk the length of that plank? And they look at the imaginary plank and they look at him and say, no way, are you kidding? I'd have to be drunk. No way am I walking a wood plank 100 feet in the air. Well, what's changed about the technical skill required to walk the plank? If you could do it on the ground, you could do it in the air, right? What's changed are the perceived consequences of failure, which in this case is plummeting to your death. So I kind of get it, right? But listen, I think many of us go through our days artificially escalating planks, artificially escalating the perceived consequences of failure to the point that we don't act. We don't take little strategic risks. Instead, we stay squarely in a place of safety. You know, it's like the old saying goes, if you want to do great work, make sure you stay in a safe place. No, of course not. Of course not. If we want to do great work, if we want to do anything meaningful, that means it's going to be challenging. It's going to be difficult. There's going to be risk involved. If we want to produce great work, we're going to have to put ourselves on the line in some capacity. But many people are afraid to do that. And the reason they're afraid is because they tell themselves stories about what will happen if they fail. And there are a couple of different kinds of fear that we have to be aware of. And I wrote about these extensively in Die Empty, and I've written about them in many other places since then. But we have to be mindful of the fear of failure, of course. The fear of failure is the most dominant form of fear that we experience. Fear of failure tells us, you know, if you introduce that idea and it doesn't work, then you're probably going to be fired and you're probably going to end up, you know, losing your house and end up living in a van down by the river in, you know, Chris Farley, Saturday Night Live parlance, right? That's what the fear of failure tells us. It tells us that one little thing is going to set off a chain reaction that's going to lead to complete disaster. Or we're afraid that if we introduce an idea and it's not received well, that we're going to be mocked, that it's going to have catastrophic career consequences, These are the kinds of stories that we tell ourselves that prevent us from taking those little strategic risks. So a little strategic risk can end up feeling like a big, gigantic, life-changing risk, when in reality, it probably isn't. It probably isn't. Fear of failure keeps us in a place of stasis. It keeps us in our safety zone. But if you look at the lives of brilliant creative pros throughout history, they didn't walk a straight path from obscurity to success, from doing nothing to doing something great. No, of course not. As a matter of fact, I started the chapter nine about fear in Die Empty with a quote from Steve Martin, who, by the way, is one of my absolute favorite creatives of all time. And the reason I say that is because he has done so many things in so many different genres. He was a stand-up comedian. He's been a novelist. He's written screenplays. He's acted, of course. You know, he's done, obviously, comedy. Now he's won a Grammy for his bluegrass band. Like, it's just crazy what this guy has been able to do. And this quote that I used in Die Empty comes from his book, Born Standing Up, which, by the way, is a phenomenal book. If you've not read this book, Born Standing Up, it's about Steve Martin's stand-up career. And he says this. He says, quote, "I did stand-up comedy for 18 years. 10 of those years were spent learning. 4 years were spent refining, and 4 years were spent in wild success. I was seeking comic originality, and fame fell on me as a byproduct. The course was more plodding than heroic." End quote. I want to camp out on this quote for just a few minutes, because I think this really captures the spirit of what it means to engage in your work in a way that requires risk, but strategic risk. He did stand up for 18 years. 10 of those years were spent learning. 4 years were spent refining, meaning the first 10 years, he was taking a lot of risks. He was trying things in a very public way. Probably a lot of those things failed. He certainly did not step on stage the first time and perfect his craft, perfect his routine the first time up. No, of course not. No comedian does that, right? 10 of those years were spent learning about how to have stage presence, about how to interact with people. 4 years spent refining, meaning once he had a semi-good routine, then he needed to refine it for a number of years. And 4 years spent in wild success. He was seeking comic originality, and fame fell on him as a byproduct. This is an interesting phrase as well. He wasn't seeking fame. He was seeking comic originality. He had a clear goal in mind that transcended his fear of failure. He knew what he was trying to do, and he was willing to fail in the direction of what he wanted to do. And fame fell on him as a byproduct. That's great. Listen, chances are, I hate to break it to you, chances are you will never become famous for what you do. I'm sorry. You might become well-known in a specific domain. That's fine. But you probably will not become famous for what you do. And that's okay, because fame is a byproduct. Fame is a byproduct. Fame is not an ambition. Fame is a byproduct of success, of doing something. We used to call people celebrities because they did something and then we celebrated them, right? And now celebrity is a job description, right? It's what people aim for, which is just ridiculous in my mind. But if you want to produce a body of work you can be proud of, you need to aim for originality in whatever space you're operating in. And then whatever happens, happens, right? As Steve Martin said, the course was more plodding than heroic. It wasn't like he had this heroic course plotted out before him. Instead, he was trying and failing and adapting and moving and changing and adapting and growing. And he navigated his way toward his ultimate end. So, is there any place where you are allowing the fear of failure to paralyze you? Is there any place where you're allowing your fear that you're not good enough, maybe that you don't belong in the room, to paralyze you? There's a dynamic that we often hear about called imposter syndrome, and it plagues creative teams. It does. And imposter syndrome is a very simple phrase that describes a very complex psychological condition where we feel like we don't really belong in the room. Everybody else has something figured out that we don't have figured out, and we don't really belong in the room. We shouldn't be giving the presentation. We shouldn't be doing the project. We shouldn't be the one in front of people. We shouldn't be the one writing the thing or designing the thing or marketing the thing or whatever it is. Somebody else should be able to do it because everybody else has it figured out and I don't. And I sure hope that people don't find out that I really don't know what I'm doing. This is imposter syndrome in a nutshell. And imposter syndrome can paralyze you. It can. I have discovered that in the midst of that sense of being an imposter, that the midst of that sense of not feeling like you belong in the room, you have to be careful to distinguish between the dynamics of certainty and clarity. Often we feel like we don't belong because we're not certain. I am not certain this is the right idea. I'm not certain that this is the right project. I'm not certain that this is the right statement to make. I'm not certain that the work is where it needs to be or that it's going to accomplish what we're trying to make it accomplish. Fine. Who is ever certain? Who is ever certain in creative work? There's always risk involved. Of course, it's always an educated guess because it's often very subjective, right? So certainty is very difficult to gauge, but clarity is critically important. So when you feel like you don't belong, when you feel like an imposter, don't seek certainty, seek clarity. Try to clarify your message. Try to clarify your craft. Try to clarify the product, clarify the message, clarify the words you're using, clarify your relationships, clarify expectations. When you seek clarity, not certainty, imposter syndrome tends to dissipate. That fear tends to dissipate. You see, often fear comes disguised as wisdom in our lives, especially as creative pros. Often fear comes disguised as wisdom, meaning fear whispers in our ear things like, are you sure that you should? Or maybe it would be better if you, or perhaps you should wait until. These are the kinds of messages that fear whispers in our ear. And often these seem like wisdom, but they're just disguised fear. So we have to be careful not to allow those narratives to creep into our lives and creep into our process and prevent us from taking little strategic risks. Jim Collins, in his book, Great by Choice, shared the stories of what he called 10X companies. These are companies that outperform their competitors by 10 times. And he said, we tend to think of these companies as giant innovative companies taking big risks and doing big things. He said, that's not really always the case. He said, often, very often, these companies will, what he called, fire bullets before they fire cannonballs, meaning we tend to think that these companies are just packing all their gunpowder into a cannon and taking a wild shot and it just happens to land. And wow, isn't that amazing? But often what we don't see is that that company had fired a series of bullets first, right? A series of calibrating shots. And they fired the first bullet with a little bit of gunpowder, so it wasn't very risky, and boom. Okay, it was a little close. Let's move it. Let's adapt it. Let's change it. And they fired another bullet, and boom. Okay, it landed a little closer. And then they fired the third bullet, and oh, okay, now we're really close. Great. Now let's make that strategic leap. Let's take that risk by packing all the gunpowder in because we've already calibrated our shot, right? So before you take a risk, you should ask yourself, have I calibrated my shot? Have I fired bullets, or am I just banking everything on this cannonball to pay off for me? Okay, again, this is a way that we mitigate the fear of taking risk. The fear of failure is by seeking clarity in the midst of that uncertainty by firing bullets before we fire cannonballs. So that's fear of failure, okay? So I hope that's helpful, but we're going to talk about another dynamic that I call fear of success. And you might be thinking, wait a minute, fear of success? Why would I be afraid of success? What does that even mean? What? Fear of success? We're going to talk about that in just a minute. Before we do, I want to let you know that this episode is brought to you by the My First Million podcast. The show is hosted by Sam Parr, who's the founder of The Hustle and Trends.co, and Sean Puri, who is an investor and former CEO of Bebo, which was a social networking website that sold to Amazon. And each week, twice a week, in fact, they take you through brainstorming business ideas, like, you know, developing a $10,000 a month side hustle, or turning Michael Jordan's house into a museum, or a blue collar side hustle, or how to build the next Apple. Wouldn't that be amazing? They break down the economics of companies that you've heard of, or maybe you've never heard of. For example, making $10,000 a month via vending machines, or an Irish pub in a box, or how to create 5+ figure events, talking self-improvement, business lessons, you know, how do you engage with every point of contact? They bring on entrepreneurs, investors, celebrities, and billionaires to brainstorm ideas with them, like Andrew Wilkinson, Mark Lohr, Steph Smith, and many, many others. So check out the My First Million podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. Again, check out My First Million wherever you listen to podcasts. And we thank My First Million for sponsoring this episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast. Okay, let's talk about fear of success. What do I mean by this? What I mean is this, and it's funny. I actually just got back from doing my first in-person speaking event that I had to travel for in a year and a half. It was 89 weeks between speaking events. And it's interesting because I brought up this concept of fear of success, and the people in the room responded in a way that I wasn't used to having response, because, you know, I've been basically doing virtual events for the last 89 weeks. And it's kind of funny to be in a room and like have people actually respond and laugh out loud and sort of fill the room. I'm like, that's a weird feeling, but a good feeling. We talked about the fact that when you succeed, let's say that you engage in a project and you deliver, I mean, you just knock it out of the park. I mean, it is like maybe the best thing you've ever done, but you had to work nights and weekends and you worked around the clock for 2 weeks because you knew it was a really important project, right? You knew that this project had to be great. So you made sure it was great. You worked around the clock, night and day, 2 weeks. You worked on weekends. You didn't go out with your friends. You didn't do anything. You basically just worked on this project for 2 weeks and you delivered it, and it was great. As a matter of fact, it was exceptional. It was far better than the work that you'd been doing previously. And you deliver it, and your manager comes to you the next day after you deliver this project. He says, listen, the client was thrilled. Great job. Way to go. Everybody loved the work. You not only delivered your work, you delivered really like 130% of what we asked you to do. That was amazing. By the way, 130% is your new baseline. That's the new expectation for you. Every time you do a project, that's what we expect from you. Now, of course, that isn't said out loud, but that is often the mindset inside of organizations or with clients, right? Once they know you can do something, they expect it every single time. That doesn't matter, by the way, that you had to work around the clock and you worked for 2 weeks straight and you didn't go out with your friends and you compromised and sacrificed a lot. It doesn't matter. What matters is you did it, and we know you can do it, so we expect you to do it every single time. And so what happens over time is, if this begins to take root, people begin to sandbag a little bit, right? They begin to not really over-deliver in the way that they probably could. And the reason is they don't want those expectations escalating to the point that they can't deliver any longer. This is fear of success. The fear that I can't keep the pace. I can't deliver like this forever and ever. I'm not going to be able to reproduce this. Or truthfully, the fear that results from comparing our in-process work with the absolute best thing that's ever been done ever in the history of our industry, right? And this is often something that people do as well. They compare their in-process work with the absolute best thing that's ever been done by anybody in their industry forever and ever, amen. And it paralyzes them. It prevents them from doing their best work. So we can't let that happen. We can't let that happen. I encourage you to ask yourself, am I allowing expectation escalation to paralyze me? Am I allowing the narrative of that root is rooted in this fear of success to paralyze me and prevent me from engaging fully and freely in the work that I'm doing? If you allow that to happen, friends, it will compromise your body of work. You will settle mediocre. You will sandbag. You will settle in. You will say good enough, good enough, good enough. And you will not produce work that you're proud of. And ultimately, you will compromise your body of work. So are you allowing that to happen to you? Okay. I hope this is helpful, this conversation about fear. I know this is, again, this is like one of the core things that professionals talk to me about in their most vulnerable moments, when they say, well, truthfully, what I'm really concerned about is that I'm just not good enough, that I'm just never going to be able to deliver, that somehow I'm going to be found out for who I really am. And so I just encourage you to come against those narratives with everything you have. It's good to have limits. It's good to test your limits. It's good to know your limits. We all have limits. We all have things we're not capable of, and that's fine, but we often draw that line far too soon. We don't test our limits because we're afraid that if we test our limits, we might discover we have some. We'd rather live with perceived invulnerability, and we never test our limits. We have to test our limits. We have to push. We have to take risks. We have to stretch. We have to do new things if we want to continue to grow. Hey, there have been several episodes in this series on Die Empty that have only been available to AC Premium subscribers. If you want to be an AC Premium subscriber, just go to acpremium.me. If you want to subscribe, you can get all of the episodes of this series and every series we do, as well as ad-free episodes. Every single episode will be ad-free for you. Is that not amazing? As well as all kinds of other resources. Ask me anything, and you can comment on these episodes on the Axon Creative site when you're logged in. There are all kinds of things we've created for AC Premium subscribers. So visit acpremium.me if you would like to become an AC Premium subscriber. And we appreciate those of you who are supporting the show by subscribing to AC Premium. Hey, we'd love to hear your thoughts, your feedback, your comments about this episode or about this series, about Die Empty. Feel free to send them to me. interact@accidentalcreative.com is my email address. You can reach me there or at accidentalcreative.com. The Axon Creative is part of the Airwave Media Network. Visit airwavemedia.com for more fine shows like this. Remember, friends, cover bands don't change the world. Don't be a cover band. You need to find your unique voice if you want to thrive. We'll see you next time.